Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. And today, we have Bengals expert, one you've heard on the show before, Mike Santagata. Did I say that correct this time?
Nailed it.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that, Mike, because yours is a name that I'm sure gets mispronounced a lot, like mine. And I appreciate doing it correctly, right? I'm glad you did it correctly. But anyway, he's going to tell us all about the Cincinnati Bengals. And Mike, kind of tough start, kind of like the Ravens in terms of below expectations, I think, at this point, with a 1-3 record.
Yeah, and it felt tough the first week where it didn't seem like much went right, but finally able to pull out a win. The Washington game was supposed to be the turnaround game, but it kind of looks like Washington's offense might just be really good, and The Bengals defense continues having their issues. So it's not the end of the world because they were able to pull out to 1-3, but it's certainly not where any fans expected them. I mean, I think most fans thought that would be reversed with wins over the Patriots and the Commanders and probably one loss to the Chiefs. So tough start, but season's young. They're not looking at mock drafts just yet.
Yep. There you go. And, the funny thing was that with both teams at 0-2, both the Ravens and Cincinnati at 0-2, they were still the 1-2 betting favorites to win the AFC North at that point. I thought that was funny with the Steelers at 2-0. But let's talk about the offseason that the Bengals had, some of the big moves, drafted players, but take us through some of that.
So, I mean, the biggest draft pick, literally, figuratively, was Amarius Mims, their first pick. He is now starting because Trent Brown, unluckily, I think it was tore his patellar tendon. So that's not an injury you come back from very well at his age. But he's looked good in pass protection. And it's kind of weird because this was even true back in college, but he looks raw as a run blocker. That's interesting because it feels like it's more intuitive for a lot of these guys to go forward than it is backwards. When I played in high school, I was actually the same way where I liked pass protecting more. Just like something happens in the run game where it's just everything goes so quick and things get quicker at the NFL level, quicker. Mm-hmm. But then just get the other guys. Chris Jenkins, second round pick. He is playing, and it seems like they're increasing his role. He's probably the best defensive tackle, but it's a low bar if BJ Hill doesn't come back. Third round picks, they had Jermaine Burton, who hasn't seen the field much other than just going out there running some deep routes, caught one of them on a shot play. It seems like they just like Yossi Vash more, and it felt like in training camp that they weren't full in on Burton taking over. Just wasn't as – it sounds like to them he wasn't working as hard as Yossi Vash. So they're going to lean to the guy that's, you know, grinding and puts in a lot of physical effort blocking, even if it's not always successful, where Burton didn't do that in college, and I don't think he's done that in the NFL. So that's where they lean on that. But he might go out there, run a couple deep routes, maybe catch one. McKinley Jackson, they had a second, third-round pick. He hasn't played yet, although his 21-day window just got activated. He could play in this game, but he missed most of training camp as well. So
he was a pup guy then, or an IR guy who's now DTR?
IR guy, designated to return. Mm-hmm. And he only had a couple days of practice because he was hurt coming in. Got hurt in practice. I don't expect them to play him too much because they probably don't feel like he's ready. Fourth round pick, the guy who might have had the biggest impact out of the first outside of Mims is Eric All, Jr. He is now the number one tight end by snaps. He is the only tight end that they have that seems to be a plus player, both blocking and receiving, where you have Drew Sample, who's a plus blocker, but not much of a receiver. And then you have Mike Gesicki, who's plus receiver, but he ain't much of a blocker. And he's been able to take over the snaps, gets more every week, it seems. After that, I mean, you've got some guys there, but the only other guy that was coming from this class would be the punter Ryan Rico, and he was a UDFA. I don't think anybody else is really going to see time except maybe one or two Cedric Johnson snaps. But
anybody in the free agency group that they brought in?
Yeah. Well, Geno Stone. that's the obvious one. Returns haven't been good so far. It was a little surprising because I didn't think he was going to come in and have, what, 8 interceptions or something. But it felt like watching him in Baltimore, he was in the right place. He would, you know, he wasn't much of a tackler, but, yep, you know, he got there. And for the Bengals so far, he's getting picked on in coverage and he's taken bad angles and not even really being a roadblock in the run game. And that's tough, especially last week. It seemed like that was his worst week. Maybe it's just fitting in so far. I don't know. It's still early enough that I wouldn't hit, you know, the full on panic alarm, but it's just, you're not getting what you paid for so far with him. Von Bell's back as well at safety, similar issues, except he's probably less athletic. So he's not getting trusted with the deep assignments as much. He's fine, I guess. It's kind of like an average level, maybe below average level safety, but somebody you can start. Other free agents, you had Sheldon Rankins. He might not play in this game. He's been injured since the Chiefs game. He went back into the Chiefs game after kind of pulling his hammy and then pulled it even more. So re-aggravated that injury that he got in game. I think that would be it for the defensive side. On the offense, not a lot of free agent new faces other than Zach Moss. He's going to be their pass protection back. He's probably going to see the field most because he gets what's there in the run game. He doesn't really get you much more that often. He'll make some guys miss once in a while, but he did it a very lucky play in a way where there was 5 seconds left and no timeouts and ball got thrown to him behind the line, going into the goal line from the 1-yard line. So couldn't even kick the field goal if he didn't make it in, but he made a guy miss, got into the end zone. He's been good in his role, but Chase Brown, who was there last year, but is seeing a bigger role, he seems to be the more explosive, exciting back between the two. And Mike Gesicki, who I previously mentioned, he will see snaps. It's almost always a pass play with him. I mean, they've lined him up to block, and it has been the results you would expect from Mike Gesicki lining up to block. I mean, the Tiger doesn't change his stripes this late into his career.
See, split wide a fair number of snaps then?
Oh, yeah. And his biggest game against the Chiefs, it was mostly splitting him out wide, getting a match against one of the safeties, and just trying to win ISO one-on-one matchups that way.
Mm-hmm. All right. Outstanding. I know the Bengals do have some injuries. Take us through those right now.
So Sheldon Rankins, like I mentioned, is injured. BJ Hill is injured, although this seems like the week he may come back because he was pushing the comeback last week. Rankins is still getting declared out before we get to inactives. So it would be not impossible, but not super likely that he would play in this game. And I keep thinking of that because the defensive tackle room has been an abject disaster with who's there. Other injuries. I mean, Trent Brown, like I mentioned, toward the patellar, they're using Amarius Mims in his place now. Other than that, not a lot of guys that are going to miss time that would play any snaps. So they're relatively healthy other than taking a lot of injuries to the DT room.
Okay. All right. I know the Bengals.
I forgot a big one. Trey Hendrickson. Trey Hendrickson, stinger in the last game. A little more worry than that when it happened because he laid on the ground for a while, not moving. And it was a head type of injury, but no concussion from what I've heard. It's just a neck stinger.
Okay. So I always hear stinger and it's been a couple of days and you don't hear anything about the player, maybe they show up as a DNP. I think it had to be a concussion. That's my reaction to it always. But
they tried to get away with something, maybe.
The Bengals of teams in the AFC North are probably in the second best cap shape, right behind the Steelers. I think in terms of the long run, the Ravens right up against the wall. So they really have to get by with the talent they have now, and they're not going to be able to re-sign all of it. You see a player like Devontae Adams, you know, reportedly is asked to be traded officially today. any chance the Bengals make a move like that to try and shore up the receiver room or improve the receiver room? I guess it would be in their case.
No. And that is because they haven't used that unused cap space to even sign Chase and Higgins. So if you're trading for Adams, you got to sign him. I assume he's old enough that he can probably, and good enough that he can probably leverage that. And that would be, that would probably not go over well in the locker room to bring him in, sign him to a long-term deal. And the two guys that have been real good for them keep going without their deals.
So what is, you know, with Chase and Higgins, what's the holdup at this point? Is it just a matter of money in terms of distance between the two sides in terms of that?
Guaranteed money. With Higgins, I think they may have made the choice not to re-sign him because they're thinking of how they're going to allocate their cap. Whether that's the right or wrong decision is up for debate. But it felt like after his window came up, they weren't as serious about re-signing him. But they were very serious about re-signing Ja'Marr Chase this offseason. It's just that he wants a lot of guaranteed money up front and over the life of the deal. And the Bengals want to push it back because the owner says, you know, putting that much money into escrow, I don't have that much money, but then, you know, it's a football team. I think he
does.
BS. Yeah, that's right.
Borrow it. Yeah.
I'm paying a lot of money to go see this game.
So it's not that. I've heard that said of Bisciotti too, who's literally the richest man in Maryland. He has over, you know, $6 billion. And somebody said, but he only might have $80 million in cash. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You know, when you have that much money, you can borrow a high percentage of that, you know, or maybe not a high percentage of that, but a high number of total dollars to get it done. Anyway, great. Let's move on to the offense. Talk about Joe Burrow a little bit, what you're seeing from him this year. Anything different about his game?
Honestly, it felt like people freaked out week one, but he's kind of been bad week one every year. And I don't know what it is where he just doesn't seem comfortable. He had happy feet and a quick trigger weeks one and week two in 2022. 2023, I kind of throw it out a little bit because of the calf injury. Although towards the end of that Ravens game, it started to feel better, and then he pulled it, and then it got much worse. But it just feels like he's never hit the ground running. And now it feels like he's where he needs to be. I mean, the one interception that so far this season came on a play that, you know, him and Ja'Marr Chase weren't on the same page. Ja'Marr Chase starts running one way, Burrow throws it, and Ja'Marr Chase runs the complete opposite direction in a scramble drill and just leaves it. That just ends up being left for the defensive back instead of being a possible explosive play. I think he's looked sharp. I think the one thing you could point to that may be a little bit different is once in a while you'll see maybe not the pinpoint accuracy that it's felt like he's had in the past. And maybe that's wrist-related. Maybe it's him getting comfortable with the wrist surgery. I know you can see him doing things with the wrist. It's not that the wrist is bothering him every play, but I feel like anybody who's had a major injury can talk about when you're after the surgery, just kind of moving it, keeping it loose, trying, and it just feels a little different. And there's a check down to Zach Moss once in a while. It's just over his head. And I think, when has Burrow ever missed a check down? And then a play to T. Higgins back of the end zone against the Commanders, too high, and he can't get both feet down. And I just think, I think Burrow could have made that pass. Maybe I'm reading into it a little bit too much, but I think it's like it's nothing serious, just like one or two plays a game where I think Joe Burrow makes that pass 2 years ago, last year when he was healthy.
Okay, so one thing about Burrow that I've noticed in terms of his play against the Ravens specifically, and this was maybe more with when they had Geno Stone last year, had a second really active ball hawk in the secondary, is that Burrow does not really like to throw deep against the Ravens. He does not like to throw into the teeth of cover two, which means a lot of the offense has been immediately to the outside, a lot of wide receiver screens and swing passes to backs and whatnot to try and get the ball out from the middle of that defense. That's four games in a row. The 22 playoff game, he took a few more chances down the field, was a little better, but honestly, he's been pretty bad the last four games against the Ravens. Do you see him taking more chances with the group he has this year down the field?
Yeah, I think you can, just because there's more juice in the wide receiver. Even though Boyd, I think, was a solid player, he wasn't threatening anybody deep down the field, really, unless it was some type of play action. He got butt naked up the field. So Jermaine Burton, that's a guy with a lot of juice, and you can throw the ball down the field if he gets that opportunity. Yossi Vash, they ran into two man against the Panthers last week, and Burrow throws it to him in between his man guy and the two deep safeties and push the ball a little bit. I do think this is just something in general with Burrow. It feels like when he sees two high coverages, he kind of kills whatever deep route there is in his mind instead of maybe hanging on it for just a moment. And this shows up, I think, most when they run like a sail concept with a little post on the outside and that deep out. Against quarters, a lot of quarterbacks will throw that post because you should have inside leverage with your receiver running down the field without help. And it feels like Burrow doesn't. And he's missed Burton. He turned down, didn't miss, but he turned down Burton on it. He turned down Yossi Vachon. He turned down Higgins on it in the past 3 years, one each year. And it, that just feels like something against the Ravens where they're probably going to play two to Jamar Chase's side. But it feels like they never challenge the Ravens deep down the field on like a quarter's side of that coverage because it's a lot of two to one side, four to one side from what I remember, at least in these games. And that kind of makes the offense feel boxed in. Now, I think things looked a little bit better, but I don't know if he was pushing the ball down the field that much in the last game before he injured his wrist. Just the offense did look all right. I don't know if you disagree on that.
Was that the game in Baltimore where he injured his wrist? We're talking about that one. I thought the game in Baltimore, he was 0 for 7 throwing 15 yards plus and had the interception. Now, the interception by Stone, was that in Cincinnati or at Baltimore?
That was in Cincinnati.
Okay, so that's the game I'm thinking of. That's the game. Because that's that game he was 0 for 7 and had the pick.
I don't know if he really pushed the ball 15 plus yards. He was only on the field for, I think, three drives, and one of them was a punt.
Yeah.
One of them was a touchdown. It felt like everything was kind of still caged in a little bit around 15-ish yards, but he was pushing to 15 yards, where sometimes against the Ravens, it feels like the cage is around like 6-7 yards. It's like, you got to throw the ball at least a little further than that.
Yeah. You got to try and get over the top of that. But it has worked out nice for Kyle Hamilton. That matchup is good because Kyle Hamilton takes away the strong side of the football field. And that's where a lot of Burrow's throws end up going against the Ravens is to some form of wide receiver screen or, they swing the ball out in the opposite direction more to a running back, I'd say. But
a playoff game where they throw it to Hayden Hurst with Kyle Hamilton on him.
Yeah.
Fumble happens.
Yeah. He's not had the greatest start, by the way, for the Ravens, but the last two games he's played a lot better, kind of like the whole team, frankly. Let's move on to talk about the current state of the offensive line.
Best it's ever been in the Burrow era, and this could be maybe something that you look to as to a reason maybe he does push the ball a little bit down the field, as he might finally be protected in this game, where it doesn't feel like he was really protected much in the past couple of matchups, at least that well. I think Amarius Mims, like I mentioned, he's been a pretty good pass protector, and Cordell Volson has taken a little bit of a step so far. Now, competition, I think, is a big issue here because he didn't look good against Chris Jones, but he does look good against, like the Patriots guys. Looked okay against John Allen, which, he lost maybe two of those reps or like true pass set type of situations, but also held up a couple of reps, which he doesn't do against Chris Jones. So that's one to look for. If he can hold his own a little bit, I think that would go a long way. Alex Kappa, Ted Karras still look solid in pass protection. And the one that's a little bit surprising is because Orlando Brown did not hit the ground running last year for this team. He's looked pretty good after 4 weeks. I think you would say, what competition has he faced? Because the Chiefs, the Patriots, the Commanders, none of these guys really have some super talented edge rusher. And Clowney always ran off of Mims' size. He didn't really go to Brown's side. But Brown has changed his stance. Notably, he used to have an open back leg and he's kind of closed that off, made a little more vertical. He's setting a little more vertical. He looks about as good as I've ever seen him. Hopefully that doesn't come back. Those words don't come back to haunt me, but that in pass protection, it's been a very good start for Orlando Brown.
Okay. So Adafi Owe will typically be Brown's opponent in the game. A lot of the Ravens rush has come from their interior, where they really, for the first time in Ravens history, they have three good interior rushers, although Michael Pierce may miss this game, but he missed last week. But they have Travis Jones has been a wrecking ball, and that's what I want to hear about, who he matches up with on the interior line.
He's mostly rushing from the nose inside of the A gap.
That's correct. Yeah. Mostly yes.
Well, that becomes really tough if he's a wrecking ball, because Madubuike is a pretty good pass rusher himself. So who do you slide to? Who do you give the help to? And that'll be interesting because, the game might come down to whoever they don't slide to. Can that player hold up against whoever this Ravens interior rusher is? Because Travis Jones, I think this year I've watched a little bit and he looks improved from the last couple of years as a pass rusher, where it felt like it's just getting a little bit more technically refined and just getting underneath guys. I mean, in that Chiefs game, he had some real good plays against that interior offensive line. That's a really good interior offensive line. Matching up against Karras, Kappa, and Volson, I mean, if it was me, I would probably test Volson with whoever can go at the B gap, and because you're probably sliding to the A gap just because it's quicker, it's closer, and seeing if he's improved and see if this is like a, you know, who has he faced matchup type of thing that he looks better, or if this is, has he actually improved as a pass protector? But that'll be interesting. I think that is one of the kind of keys of the game that I don't think a lot of people are going to talk about, but I think they'll be okay on the edges. I mean, Owe has improved as well, and Ojabo actually looks like he was, you know, this looks like his first real year after the terrible injury. He's looking pretty good himself, but that feels more like a strength on strength type of thing a little bit. While this could be, Volson hasn't been good as a pass protector and straight dropbacks in the past. So that'll be the one interesting thing for me. So that's a good point to bring up.
Very good. How about the wide receivers? Take us through those.
Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, I mean, I'm sure the fans know them, but yeah. Chase, I think, showed last week he's still one of the best yards after catch guys if you're going to be a weak tackler, because he broke three of those tackles and ran for a touchdown. But I think the Ravens usually aren't weak tacklers. They usually have a guy that's pretty strong bringing them down. T. Higgins, obviously, big guy. He can move a little bit better than you might think, get open. The guys that are new... And Gesicki's basically a receiver, so he's just another big target. He gets matched up with a safety that has an advantage. They'll go at it a little bit, put him in some high-low concepts where he can take advantage of getting the ball. I think Josivash is the guy you're going to see the most. Andre Josivash, he was their, I think it was a sixth-round pick last year from Princeton, a heptathlete from Princeton.
Wow.
I guess that's... Okay. Was that six different sports at once going?
Heptathlete is seven, but I thought that went out with about the 1912 Olympics. Seriously, you don't hear about it anymore.
The Ivy League. Yeah. The Ivy League's kept it going. There you go. But he's a very athletic player. He's been reliable. He's been mostly reliable in the end zone. He's been an awesome red zone threat his whole career. And I think he already has four touchdowns this season. He had two against the Chiefs. He had one against the Commanders, didn't have one last week. So I think it's three touchdowns so far this year out of Burrow's like five, six thrown, seven. Mm-hmm. At one point he had three of Burrow's four touchdowns. So they look toward him when they're in the red zone, especially the low red zone, close to the end zone. It seems like he has a good idea of how to get open when the play breaks down. And this past two games, it felt like he's gotten better between the 20s and being a guy that they can trust in structure and throwing the ball to him there. Only had one catch, but it was a really awesome catch to be able to come down with that with two safeties and a guy behind you all ready to just lay the wood on you to be able to catch it, bring it in, protect yourself, get down. I think he's been a good tertiary option. And like I mentioned with Jermaine Burton, he's a guy that'll see probably five-ish snaps, and they're probably all going to be deep routes. I don't think they're going to do anything else with him. They're just going to try to take the top off the defense with him if Burrow is willing to push the ball to him.
Interesting player in this last draft. Certainly a lot of people had different opinions of where he should have gone, but I liked him a lot too. Let's talk about the tight end group. You talked about Gesicki a little bit just then. You talked about some of the others earlier on. Is there anybody else in the tight end room we need to talk about before we move on?
No, okay. That would just be those three.
Okay, how about the running backs then? And do they ever use a fullback these days, or is a tight end in the backfield, or what do they do?
Tight end in the backfield, you'll see that. You'll see once in a while, you'll see Drew Sample, their best blocking tight end, just as the pass protection running back. And that's in like third and extra long where there's no chance of a run. They'll do that. But I have seen Eric All line up as a fullback. I've seen Drew Sample line up as a fullback. They'll try to run some ISO concepts. They do a lot of kind of split inside zone or counter where they're going to try to get him to kick out an end or seal off the outside that way. They run some pistol now. They have a whole pistol set, and it typically doesn't involve a sidecar fullback, but it has once in a while. Typically, they'll just play two tight ends there. But yeah, you'll see a little bit of – there's no fullback on the roster, but you'll see either Eric All or Drew Sample line up at fullback in this game.
Okay, and how have the runners been? You talked a little bit earlier about Chase Brown, and take us through.
Zach Moss, like I said, he gets what's there. I was talking about him as a free agent. He's a really good pass protector, picked up a defensive tackle, and then checked it, got into his check down for a 20-yard gain last week when Karras fell over. So, I mean, that's pick up a 330-pound guy. That's awesome. But probably not by design. Chase Brown is who I'd want to talk about more, though. He has been very efficient this year. I think he's number two in success rate. And then he's also leading the league behind Lamar Jackson, but for running backs in yards per carry. And he's doing all this with his longest run being 20 yards, and that's his only run of 20 plus yards. So he's just been an efficiency monster on the ground without having some long touchdown to kind of boost that up. And it feels like he's very close to breaking a long one, because it's not as if he's not an athlete. He's a very fast player. It just feels like he gets tripped up right before he's about to break off a long one, which I also kind of saw in college where it didn't seem like he had the greatest balance, but he's getting close to breaking something.
I just want to, didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bring this up to put this, because I talk about success rate for running backs a lot, and I usually use the PFR definition just because it's available and easy to deal with. But he's at 72.4%. To give you an idea, it's only through 29 carries, but Keaton Mitchell last year was at 68%. The Ravens this year as a team are at 56.5%, which I saw some graphic that didn't even lead the NFL. 56.5. That's extraordinary high number. For those who have heard me say it before, the all-time record holder in this category is Gus Edwards at 57.4%. They haven't been keeping it for the last 30 years or so, but he's the all-time record holder. I was shocked by that, but that number is off the freaking charts for Chase Brown. That's for certain.
I think a little bit comes from some designer runs. You know, he gets the counter, he gets the stuff that gets him into the open field, he gets the stuff that's easy to read out. But last week he was getting some of those kind of grimy stuff, like five-man inside zone duo, and having to read that out, and he was still successful reading it out. So I can't imagine they're not going to expand his role going forward.
Yeah, I mean, he'd do really well with a read option quarterback, I think, because if you're looking at either option, and it's definitely a case where Jackson lifts all both for the Ravens running backs. He takes a lot of the balls where the defense is closing in or caging in the running back. All right. Let's move on. So I think we answered the question about the type of personnel they like to run out of. It's mostly 11 runs, right, then?
It's mostly 11, but there's a lot more 12 now. I saw Andrew Russell say, Bengals guy, they lead the league in 12 personnel usage right now. And I think that's because,
not Bengals.
I know. They're using this Eric All guy a lot, and he is seeing the field a lot. And I don't think they were expecting him to be this good this early. So they're still getting Drew Sample out there at the same time as him, or Mike Gesicki out there at the same time. And without Tyler Boyd, you don't really need to be in 11 personnel all the time, because is Eric All better than Andre Yosivash? I think you can make the case. So get your best players on the field.
And you don't use Burton all that often. When they do use Burton, is he a Y or a Z guy, or where does he line up usually?
Outside, either Z or X. And it's just far outside and run that deep down the field, basically.
All right. Fair enough. Other common like
play concepts or formations they use? One thing I think Ravens fans would be interested in, are they still a fairly standard 11 team when they do that, in terms of having it be a 2x1 on the tight end side, the two being on the tight end side?
Yeah, I mean, that part of the offense is still the same. It just feels like they've added in this 12 personnel evolution to it. So you'll still feel, it'll still feel normal when they get out there in 11. They're spread out. And a lot of times that tight end's not even attached to the offensive line. He's out mm-hmm. wide. And they'll get into 3x1 and sometimes have that one be the tight end. They did that a lot against Kansas City. But yeah, the difference is now is when you get into the 12 stuff, where they can get a little bit funky, where it sometimes it looks like just a wing. They've got two tight ends to the one side. Sometimes they'll play tight end on each side. A lot of times they have a tight end somewhere around the backfield, even if it's more in that sniffer position or it's in the fullback. Yeah. So that's the part that'll be a little bit different. It's not a lot of under center, but it's there. And the pistol stuff is the stuff that's most interesting, at least to me, just in terms of I haven't seen them do this ever, where they're getting in pistol and trying to run some downhill gap run game.
Yeah, that's it was a big deal for the Ravens, of course, in 2019 with Mark Ingram and Jackson. But it's something we've seen, you know, it's frustratingly little in the time since, I would say, because you can still run play action out of shotgun with pistol, but it's harder to do it out of sidecar because all the fakes are forward facing and more visible if you do it that way. But anyway, they've not done with that. Let's talk about the Ravens. One weakness really that we've seen on defense is some of the inside linebacker play not being able to stay with receiving options. The Ravens have addressed it by going to the dime defense now on passing down. So they're the last 2 weeks, despite all tendencies of their defensive coordinator, they've moved to that. But my question is this, that how can the Bengals take advantage of that? And I don't remember now what I was going to say. The Chiefs ran a ton of bunch formations to run picks and rubs that took advantage of it very effectively. Are the Bengals a team that does a lot of that or could do a lot of that?
They haven't done a lot of it. I mean, they have a little bit in Zach Taylor's past, although the bunches are sometimes a little loose. Like, they're not as tight as you'd think. And I think that'd be on purpose. I don't think guys are messing up their splits, which is just interesting to me. I don't know why. I don't think they're going to get in a lot of bunches. They would probably try to attack it, getting into some 3x1 stuff and maybe having that tight end on the backside. And are you going to have three defensive backs to the sides of the wide receivers, or is, if you're playing zone coverage, or is one of those linebackers going to have to cover the third receiving option in there? It'll be interesting, but I don't see them going to bunches and stacks to try to create rubs. I mean, they're just not a team that does that often.
Okay. All right. That's actually good to hear, actually, from my perspective. I think it's one of the really effective things that we've seen. Let's flip over the defense now. And the first question I always like to ask is, when the get teams in passing situations, whether that's second and 10, third and medium or longer, how do they line up, and what personnel package do they like to play, and how do they like to set up their coverage?
On passing downs, they'll get into the 4-2 mostly and just play some type of over front, not overloading sides that often. They did a little bit in the 2-minute drill against the Panthers, but it feels like Anarumo kind of keeps it that way of just structured 4-2-5 and pretty standard nickel look in passing.
Committed
downs.
Nickel. They're a committed nickel, meaning they don't really use dime concepts. They're a 2-3 down linebackers or two linebackers on all downs. Let's put it that way.
I wouldn't say all downs, but most. I think most situations you'll look at that and see a 4-2. I think they have dabbled a little bit into dime this year just because they have a corner that's not seeing time in DJ Turner that they think is pretty good. And they have a guy in Dejon Anthony if they want to go even lighter, which they did against the Chiefs. But they do that all the time against the Chiefs and nobody else to get into 5-6 or 6-7 defensive back looks sometimes and just try to defend the pass. They'll bring Dejon Anthony onto the field, who's a rookie seventh round safety, but he didn't really see the field against the Panthers. I think that was a game plan type of thing. I think when you're looking at pass downs, it's a pretty standard look. The only thing I could think of would be in the past, sometimes Anarumo's gotten blitz heavy against the Ravens when they get into passing downs like that. Maybe you would see them try to do some funky looks that way.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So let's talk a little bit about the defensive line and tell me about rotation, depth, and snap management. I know there's been some injuries there.
Yeah, go outside in. Trey Hendrickson probably plays as many snaps as he can, but we'll see if he plays, and if he does play, if he's limited. Sam Hubbard kind of gets the same role where he just plays as many snaps as he can, even though he doesn't bring much as a pass rusher these days. He's still a solid run defender, just not even beating lower competition as a pass rusher. Then on the outside, Miles Murphy, his window just opened up. He could play in this game. If he does play, it's kind of a question of how much, because this would be his first game back. He would probably be rushing from the right tackle side, stepping in for Sam Hubbard. Joseph Osai would be the next defensive end. He'll rush from the left side mostly, although they have moved him a little bit, but I think it's because he's the third guy and he's just filling in for whichever one needs a breather. And then once in a while you get Cedric Johnson out there, but inside has been the issue. They've had to start Zach Carter and Jay Tufele the past 2 weeks, who coming into the year were DT5, DT6, fighting for one roster spot, and instead four of the defensive tackles got hurt, and they had to start. It hasn't been good. They signed Lawrence Guy off the street. I think he's been a little better than both of them, but he's really just replacement-level defensive tackle. He goes out there, does his job for the most part, doesn't really make a splash play here and there, but, you know, he's sound. He's what you think a 34-year-old guy would probably do, you know, experienced, winning that way. But he's not much of a pass rusher at this point in his career. He wasn't really when he was in his prime. It looks like I think B.J. Hill will play, and B.J. Hill would be the best defensive tackle of this group. I assume you give him as many snaps as he can handle, because I don't think Sheldon Rankins plays. Chris Jenkins looked good. I think they're going to increase his snap count, but B.J. Hill is the only guy that you would look to and be like, I think he can provide you solid quality level play every down.
So that what I'm hearing from the rotation, and you're talking about snap management already when you're talking about these defensive tackles, is this a group where, first of all, I assume they'd activate? Actually, I don't know, because the rules are different for a 4-3 line as opposed to a 3-4 line in terms of what's the standard number you activate. But for the interior defensive line, and the Ravens have gotten themselves in a game where they've activated four for a number of games. And I'm completely opposed to that, by the way. I think it's way too much risk. And you know, the marginal special teams player you're getting in exchange for being a defensive lineman short is just exposing you to tons of risk if things go wrong. Hasn't burned them yet, but they've begged for being sevened out on any of these games happening. The question I would have for you is this a game where the Ravens, by use of an extended number of snaps, or by winning the snap battle significantly, playing a more grindy running offensive style, are likely to derive an advantage versus a team like the Bengals?
Yeah, I think you could, especially if you can get in the situations where you get the backup defensive tackles on the field for a long period of time. I think Chris Jenkins will see the second most snaps, but he didn't last week. In fact, he played at least to start the game. He didn't come into the game until the goal line stand, and they started three defensive tackles, started out in an odd front 3-4 type of approach against the Panthers base. And it was Lawrence Guy, Zach Carter, and Jay Tuvele instead of Chris Jenkins. Maybe it's just they don't feel like the rookie's ready. I don't know. But he came in for the goal line stand. They finally stopped the run and got a goal line stand and stopped them on fourth down. Chris Jenkins actually made the stop on fourth down. I have to think his role will increase if he plays well as a rookie over guys that are replacement level or below that. But you never know. I do agree, though. I think if you they might finally have five defensive tackles, but they've been four by necessity lately. And really, they against the Commanders, I think it was three. I think all they had was just Zach Carter, Jay Tufele, and Lawrence Guy.
And I know three to make two is more risk than four to make two or three. Because I mean, even the Ravens, they hardly play any base. They played eight snaps with three down linemen in the entire game. So you don't really end up with too many times per game where you actually need three. But three to make two sounds really, really risky if you lost somebody.
Yeah, luckily they didn't lose anybody, but that game was a big risk. I don't think you'll see that. They could activate up to five for this game. I think this would be the week, though, that you got guys that are coming off injuries that are going to be playing in this game. And what is their snap count going to look like? Can they handle 40 snaps, where B.J. Hill might be where he normally is, 60% of plays or somewhere around there? But he's coming off an injury. Can he do that?
All right. All right. Outstanding. Let's move on to the linebacker group, a group that's got some Raven killers in it for sure. Logan Wilson in particular, but tell us about how they're playing this year.
Logan Wilson's having a great start to his year. I think last year was a little bit of a down year for him. It feels like Jermaine Pratt's been okay, but he almost looks a step slower, which he was never some extremely fast guy to begin with, even though he was a former safety. Feels like he's always been not plodding, but, you know, he didn't look like some coverage guy. I guess he could run with wide receivers back a few years ago, a little bit, when he had to pick them up, but doesn't look like that this year. Logan Wilson, though, I think he's looked smart. He's been in the right place. He's fit the run really well, even around bad defensive tackle play. I think he's been really good this year, and that's good to see because they paid him, and then he didn't look good last year. So seeing that improvement. And then you might see in Keem Davis Gaither, they have sometimes gone to their 4-3 base rather than a 3-4 base against the Ravens just to have off-ball bodies moving in some type of option game, so that they have more guys that aren't stuck on the line of scrimmage to flow. And they went to a 4-3 base against the Chiefs and against the Commanders, but I think that was by necessity when you're talking about having three defensive tackles active. And in the Chiefs game, two of their defensive tackles got hurt. I think they were down to their last two in that game because they didn't have Lawrence Guy yet. So kind of getting to that four down base is a necessity. I don't even know if they could have gotten to three guys unless they moved Sam Hubbard inside or something. But I like Keem Davis Gaither. I think he's played really well when he's been given his opportunities. And I'd rather see him on the field than a third defensive tackle if we get into base anyway, because he keeps making good on it. He got an interception on Patrick Mahomes in coverage, and he's done a good job of playing the run too, despite being a smaller guy.
Okay. Definitely the one of the things, I mean, there's been a lot of things the Bengals have played well defensively, specifically against Lamar Jackson, that have really worked. But one of the things I think I've seen in the past is sending, you know, the normal rule is your off-ball linebacker to the side of any kind of rollout immediately rushes the pocket when the pocket is broken. And it's almost like the Bengals anticipate the pocket broken. The Browns do this very well as well, too. And they get somebody downhill quicker against Jackson as he's starting to move around and it looks like he's going to leave, as opposed to waiting for it to actually happen. And that's been, to my way of thinking, or you know, to my observation, that's been something that's been very effective for the Bengals. Do you look at it that way too?
Yeah, and I think some of that is sometimes some type of, I don't know if they get a beat on it, but it seems like sometimes they're able to send Mike Hilton off the weak side, like they know that the rollout's coming that way and they can kind of kill it before it starts too. But it does feel like they kind of are a little aggressive with him when he starts breaking contain.
Yeah. All right. Been a very low volume passing offense the last couple of weeks, mostly running the ball, of course, but which has made the pass game more effective as you would expect it to. But they've also suddenly all of a sudden discovered that Justice Hill can actually run a screen pass, which has been something. So we'll see how the Bengals are able to contain that. But that linebacker group has been the big problem, I'd say, in the Bengals defense for the Ravens, is that they're a good fast group and they know where to be and they're pretty good in coverage. And it's just when they play the Bengals, that's the group I always worry about. I also worry about, you know, Logan Wilson hip dropping on one of our players too, because he's certainly a good tackler. Let's go to the secondary and talk about each of those players.
Starting with the corners, we'll go to, I guess I mentioned Mike Hilton, more of a blitz specialist, but he is fine when he's playing zone coverage. I think in man coverage, he can get got where he just doesn't have the athleticism to keep up with some of those guys, but he's usually in the right place in zone coverage. Best run defending defensive back that they have. Just a guy that at 5'9", 180 pounds should have no business making the plays he does in the run game. But I mean, even against Derrick Henry in the past with the Titans, he was one of the main guys that would chop him down at the legs and be able to get him stopped before he gets going. Because, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this. When Derrick Henry gets going, it's a lot harder to bring him down than it is when he gets started. He's not a guy that fires out of the gate, but once he builds up that speed, I mean, that's a runaway freight train. So maybe that's part of the key to the Bengals' defense in this game, is being able to get Mike Hilton in there in those run fits before Henry gets going, because he'll have a heck of a better chance of stopping him before he gets going than after. After that, Cam Taylor-Britt has been he was supposed to be the best corner, and he was, I think, weeks one and week two, and then he got beat week three a few times, and week four was a disaster. It could have been worse. He got benched before halftime for DJ Turner because he could not keep up with Deontay. I think it was 100 yards given up before halftime, and they pulled him. They put in DJ Turner. DJ Turner makes two pass breakups. They're trying to get Cam Taylor back in the game, and he immediately picks up a holding flag and gets beat for a touchdown. So I've never seen him play that bad in my life. I don't know what was going on, but Deontay Johnson just had him. But it was also Xavier Leggett getting him. It wasn't even because stylistically, he's a physical guy and he tries to get into people. If he's going to miss his jams and he's not going to be able to keep up with Deontay Johnson's release, you know, Deontay Johnson's a good mover, even if he's not good at a lot of things. He's a really good mover and getting open. It's kind of a catch point running after the catch that's been his issue, but he's killing Cam Taylor Britt on that. I could see that happening. But when he's facing a big physical guy in Xavier Leggett and he can't be physical with him, there's something going on, I think, between the ears there where he just lost all his confidence. We'll see. He's going to start. I would feel pretty confident saying he's going to start in this game. If he plays that poorly again, I don't know if they're going to have a quick leash on him or not. But yeah, that was tough to watch in week four to be confident in him in week five. Dax Hill moving from safety to corner. Not a transition you often see work out. I feel like that's sometimes when you see that year three, you're like, oh, that's the end of his career. That's a first rounder, but he's been good. I think you can see a little bit of cracks in the armor just once in a while, and it's not on targets. He's been very good when targeted, and he's recovering and making plays. It's just, I know on that Cam Taylor Britt interception against Mahomes that everybody probably saw with the one handed down the sideline, look to the other side, and Rashee Rice kind of has Dax Hill stacked in a single high running up the field. I think if he looked that way instead of towards Cam Taylor Britt, he might have had something. But also, I can't say definitively because Dax Hill's been really good at recovering and breaking up plays down the field. He was the guy that gave up the touchdown, I guess, to Terry McLaurin, but that was also what an insane throw and on zero blitz there.
Yeah, it's just a marvelous throw. You don't get much better. Cam Taylor Britt is typically lines up at right corner, right?
Yes, defensive right, and Dax Hill is defensive left, right. And it's almost always that way.
Okay, so right, they're not chasers, you're saying. Okay, that's important. Right. So anyway, it would typically be Bateman on the side with Cam Taylor Britt. So I would have to think that's going to be an easier matchup for him than some of the players he's faced, given that Jackson just does not have the same kind of connection with Bateman that he has with others. Jackson needs to see the route break to throw that football. He just doesn't seem to be comfortable throwing a kind of back shoulder throw or any kind of that, where Bateman could really give you some separation. But that should be an easier matchup, I would think, for him.
Yeah, I'd be more worried about him against Zay Flowers, I think, just in terms of shifty movement ability type of situation there, where if he's killing Cam Taylor Britt on the release and Cam Taylor Britt can't jam him, then that could cause some issues. But Dax Hill might match up better because he has good movement ability with a guy lined up like Zay Flowers on that outside, where he's also not as strong as Cam Taylor Britt. So I don't know, maybe the Ravens flip it a little bit, but
maybe
if they haven't done that in the past, I don't know. I get frustrated about that with the Bengals, where they're running Trey Hendrickson into Trent Williams 30 times a game. They won't run him against McGlinchey.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Really appreciate that. So maybe any other insights into some things defensively you think the Bengals might do against the Ravens that would be maybe different from what they normally do?
The things I think of are not what they don't normally do against the Ravens, just what they don't normally do in general, playing like a 4-3 type of base, playing blitzing a bit more. We'll see. I think the Ravens been, I watched quickly what was listed as blitzes on the NFL Pro, and it seemed like the Ravens have better answers this year. I mean, you could speak to that than I could, but Roman never really had the answers for Lamar, it felt like, and for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like Lamar really breaks the zero blitz and just is able to run for 100 yards either. But we'll see if they're going to try to pressure him that way. I think it leaves your guys on islands when you do that. And if they have good answers, they have to make tackles. And they've been very bad tackling this season outside of the Kansas City game, missing a lot of tackles. And it's everybody. It's even guys other than, I think, Logan Wilson. I think everybody else has missed multiple tackles in a game.
Yeah, looking at this, it looks a little high. It looks a little high in terms of the percentage, so I trust your judgment on that. Mike, always great talking football with you. We don't do score predictions here, but I'd like to hear one player on each side of the ball you think matches up quite well with the Ravens.
I think Logan Wilson would have been my choice, and we kind of hinted at that, where he's had some good games against the Ravens in the past. Mm-hmm. I don't think this defense is – I wouldn't predict this defense to have a great day against Baltimore, even if they've done it in the past. Just I don't have confidence in them right now, watching the past 4 weeks. But if somebody does have a good day, I think it'd be Logan Wilson. Somebody gets a turnover or whatever. On the other side of the ball, I'm interested in this running game matchup because the Ravens are number one defense in success rate when it comes to running the ball. And Chase Brown is kind of like the number one guy at being successful. So that's a strength on strength matchup. But I think I'm going to move more. I think T. Higgins scores a touchdown. He's been close. And I think if the Ravens are going to focus a lot on Ja'Marr Chase like they have in the past, it leaves an opportunity for him to be able to score. I don't know if it's a deep ball or anything, but that just feels like something they'll try to push for in this game. Although it does seem like whoever would be number three in a three wide receiver set should have a good game. If that's going to be Ja'Marr Chase, they're going to be focused on it. You can't just sneak him in there and the Ravens are going to cover him with a linebacker. So I'll go T. Higgins on that side. Although I feel like it's a little tough. It's a little tough because I want to go Joe Burrow, but hasn't had good games against them in the past.
Okay. All right. And this would be the best right tackle the Ravens have faced. So Kyle Van Noy is on a streak of multiple sack games. I'm sure that'll probably end this week against primarily Mims, right? That he'll be facing.
Only Mims at right tackle. Kyle Van Noy has a great inside move. I think that's how you can get him. I think he's okay outside and through him don't seem available, but it seems once or twice a game, there's an inside move that wins against him.
All right. We've certainly seen a fair amount of that and a good spin move from Van Noy, which I really didn't know he had when he came to the Ravens, but he's been a much better pass rusher here. That's for sure. Mike, you're always my go-to Bengals guy. Certainly a great expert on that team. How can people talk football with you if they maybe have a question about the Bengals or find your stuff online?
You can find everything on my Twitter, X, whatever, Bengals_Sands. I will probably reply. Pretty active on there. If you don't have that, you can find more of my thoughts on the It's Always Game Day in Cincinnati podcast or read whatever article I put out each week for Cincinnati Bengals Talk Sports Illustrated.
Okay. Outstanding stuff. For other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a Film Study Short, hit me up. If you want to do something positive for the show, tell somebody else about it. That's all we ask. If you feel like writing a 50-word review, that's fine. But just tell somebody who may not be exposed to the podcast. Mike, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.